Stay tuned now for Dr. Stephen Zelikoff and a program you will not want to miss. Bone Talk. That's Bone Talk with Dr. Stephen Zelikoff on 1460 WVOX.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Dr. Stephen Zelikoff. And welcome to another episode of Bone Talk. Today, we are very, very fortunate to have our guest, Dr. Yabo Musay, who is a board-certified anesthesiologist with a fellowship training and expertise in regional anesthesia and acute pain medicine. She completed her fellowship at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York City and is a section chief for the Division of Orthopedic Anesthesia at Westchester Medical Center. Thank you, Dr. Musay. I appreciate your joining our show.
Thank you very much.
And our topic today is really going to be talking about enhanced recovery pathways for orthopedic surgery, particularly hip and knee surgery, using innovative anesthesia techniques. I think that one of the things that I run into as a joint replacement specialist is that when I talk to my patients, a lot of their concern and fears have to do with the anesthesia. And the question is that what type of anesthesia is it? They've heard about stories from 30 years ago that somebody knew somebody that had some type of event. And I think that there's been so much advancement in terms of the types of anesthesia that we perform and in terms of the way that we do our hip and knee replacements today. So I think that what I was hoping today is that we're very fortunate to have a specialist who really doesn't just do anesthesia but does really specializes in orthopedic anesthesia to talk to us a little bit about some of the advances. So, Dr. Musay, can you just tell me a little bit about what orthopedic anesthesia is?
So, orthopedic anesthesia involves two main techniques that we typically use nowadays. That's neuraxial anesthesia, which is similar to the same as spinal anesthesia or epidural anesthesia. And the second part is peripheral nerve block, so where we deposit numbing medication in certain part of your body to pretty much numb you up so that we can actually proceed with the surgery without doing general anesthesia where we have to breathe for you and put an endotracheal tube in. So with orthopedic anesthesia, with the advancement with ultrasound utilization in orthopedic anesthesia, we're able to do more nerve blocks, which means we can just target the specific nerve that supplies the area you're coming in for surgery for, and we numb up that limb. It could be your shoulder, it could be your arm, your leg, it could be your ankle, and we deposit numbing medication in that area, and you can have your surgery while you're asleep, but you're breathing on your own. You don't require general anesthesia, and the medication typically lasts about the time for the surgery, or sometimes it can last a little bit longer so that you don't have a lot of pain after the surgery.
That's amazing. I think that one of the things, and I'd love to get into the different types of anesthesias, you know, you mentioned a little bit about having to do with the nerve blocks. I mean, one of the common questions I have, because I'll tell people that when we do the surgery, we usually do this under a regional anesthetic. They'll be comfortable, but it's not general anesthesia, so they're not asleep for the procedure. And the big question I always get is, am I going to hear everything that's going on?
Right. So you are actually, the patient is actually asleep. We call this sedation. So this is moderate sedation as compared to general anesthesia. So moderate sedation means that you're asleep. If I needed to wake you up, I can wake you up by just calling your name or tapping on you, and you don't require a breathing tube. So you're able to support your own breathing, but you're asleep. It's similar to sedation that patients go for colonoscopies or endoscopies, and where you're asleep, you're not aware of what's going on in the operating room, but the limb that the surgeon is working on is completely numb, so you can't move that area. But you're comfortable asleep. You won't be hearing anything. And then when the surgery is over, we just turn off the medication, and you pretty much wake up.
now, which is really so much safer. Well, I think that one of the concerns that we've always had with general anesthesia, particularly with some older patients that we have, is concerns about cognitive changes that they may have in terms of their awareness, particularly people that may have already started running the path of having early dementia and things of that nature. And one of the concerns is with general anesthesia, is that you can end up with an exacerbation of cognitive dysfunction or mental dysfunction after a general anesthesia. Is that a problem, and is that something that we're usually better off avoiding general anesthesia for?
Correct. So with patients with history of dementia, you don't necessarily have to have history of dementia, but if you're elderly, so our body does not tolerate general anesthesia as well. So it can affect our memory. So that's why doing a regional anesthesia technique with minimal sedation, which is still a form of anesthesia, but it's less. It doesn't affect your brain as much because we're using minimal drugs, and we're also using a drug that does not affect the brain as much as general anesthesia would. So that's why we tend to do, especially orthopedic procedure in elderly patients, with the regional anesthesia technique with minimal sedation. And patients wake up really comfortable. They're fully lucid afterwards. You see them in recovery. Within a few minutes, they're back to their baseline mental status, and it really does work great especially for patients, elderly patients.
So that's pretty amazing. That really is good. That really tends to be some of the biggest concerns that I have, as the people like, oh my God, I have to have general anesthesia, and they've heard about grandma that may have had general anesthesia and was never the same afterwards. And I think that the reality is that you can go ahead and do these procedures without having to go to sleep is such a big relief for many of our patients. So I mean, a lot of the advances now that we have in hip and knee replacements. Particularly when we look at patients now that are coming in, patients tend to be younger, they're more active, they want to go back to their activities more quickly. Unfortunately, patients also continue to have various medical comorbidities. They also tend to be heavier, unfortunately. And I think that we still need to go ahead and make sure that patients do terrific. The implants that we now have available to us tend to be better. Implants now can last up to 30, 40 years in terms of longevity. Patients' activities, I think, are better in that we really are emphasizing people going back to their sports earlier. And, I tend to let most of my patients with hip and knee replacements go back to pretty much whatever they want to do. And, we really try to do procedures now with sort of a minimally invasive technique, in the sense that we try not to disrupt their tissues as much as possible, and to really allow them to go back to that as quickly as possible. A lot of this has to do with early mobilization. And early mobilization means that we want to get them up as quickly as possible. And I think that when I started doing hip and knee replacements a number of years back, people would be in the hospital for 2 weeks. They would be sitting in bed for the first 2-3 days. And that really wasn't great. And I think one of the things we're realizing, that people that have hip and knee replacements particularly aren't sick. So they don't need to be in a hospital. They're having a procedure. We allow them to go ahead, and we want them to get up, and we want them to move as early as possible. And at this point, we've really evolved getting our patients up the same day. Many of our patients are able to do stairs the same day, and many of our patients with hip and knee replacements now are going home the same day. A lot of that has to do with you and the orthopedic anesthesia component of it. And I think that, towards allowing people to get up, I think the biggest piece that you mentioned before has to do with the way that you're able to manage the art of anesthesia. And, look, not all anesthesiologists are the same, just like not all orthopedic surgeons are the same. I think that there's a huge art to the way that you manage and titer the medication, so that people wake up, they kind of feel good, they're not nauseous, they're clear-headed. They have a block in place. And, one of the big issues of the blocks that you had raised before is the fact that they're comfortable after surgery. So with general anesthesia, you wake up and you have pain because you just got operated on. Right. The beauty of these blocks is that they're comfortable. How do you go ahead, and I'd love you to speak a little bit to, you talk about the way you do the blocks and that you keep them comfortable, but so much also has to do with the blocks you do around the time of the surgery that keeps people comfortable and yet moving their leg, and you keep them right. comfortable for a number of days so they don't need a lot of narcotics.
Right. So what we do for, especially let's talk about if you're having a total knee replacement. So what we try to target is the sensory block that supplies part of the knee. So we try not to block any of the motor component, which is the ones, the nerves that allows you to move. So we only block the sensory, which is just the sensation, so you don't feel that pain fibers. So we use a lower concentration of the local anesthetic that we use, bupivacaine. So we use a lower concentration, and we just target the sensory component of the nerve. So you're able to move your limb, work with your physical therapist, but you have minimal pain. So you don't, that sensation, that area, you don't feel that area, but you're able to do physical therapy. So with the use of ultrasound also, we can target specifically which nerve we're looking for. So ultrasound allows you to see where you're going, allows you to identify the nerve that is that we want to target closely as compared to, like, you know, maybe 2 decades ago where we were using mostly nerve stimulator and not ultrasound. Now that we have ultrasound devices, we're able to specifically target the nerves and just cover the sensory component of the nerve so that you can actually do physical therapy and move your leg and not be completely unable to move your limbs.
And how long do many of these blocks last?
So it all depends on what kind of local anesthetic you use, but predominantly for knees and hip, most of the time, most patients will get about between 8 to 24 hours of pain relief for the most part. You can always extend that by adding what we call additives to the block, and those additives can prolong the block up to 42 hours. But for the most part, we do 8 to 24 hours.
That's great. So for the first day or so, patients are pretty comfortable after the surgery.
Yeah.
Which is huge because the initial, you know, being able to get up comfortably after the procedure and being able to move your leg effectively, that makes all the difference in the world. And so much of the complications that we used to run into in terms of swelling and in terms of blood clots and all that really were partly associated with the fact that people were immobile for the first day or so.
Yeah.
So the fact that now we can start getting them up more comfortably with earlier movement, besides just feeling better, there's real consequences in terms of the improvement that people tend to have in terms of the risks that they run into in terms of blood clots, which one of the best
right.
things you can do to avoid a blood clot is early mobilization. So
correct.
Being able to get people up quicker makes a big, big difference. So
correct.
One of the other things that you benefit from as well with regional anesthesia and doing spinals is that there is improvement in terms of blood loss, and there's also improvement, mm-hmm. Which has been shown in terms of developing blood clots. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So based on multiple studies, doing neuraxial anesthesia, which is regional anesthesia, reduces the incidence of bleeding. So when we deposit the local anesthetic into the space, it actually... There's a two-factor. It does vasodilate the vessels, like in terms of expand the vessels, but also it helps to constrict the vessels. And in terms of blood clot, this has to do with mostly with one of the medications we use to give the patient during the surgery. So we typically try to use bupivacaine, which is what we use for most of our spinal anesthesia. And that actually does not last as long as previous local anesthetic we were using, and also allows patients to move. So the more mobile you are right after surgery, sometimes physical therapy sees you an hour after your surgery. And the more mobile you are, the less likelihood you're going to get a blood clot. Also, we know that patients that have habits like smoking increases your risk of a blood clot. So we do like a pre-surgical optimization of patients, and we encourage patients to stop smoking at least 4 to 6 weeks prior to surgery, and that has shown about an 80% reduction in the risk of a blood clot after having a total joint replacement. So everything that we are doing right now in terms of maintaining nutrition, stop smoking, using certain medications, controlling your diet, controlling your sugars, all of that helps in the long term about reducing blood clot, bleeding, and also for wound healing after surgery. So patients do a lot better, and that's why we can do the surgery on same-day surgery. So that's why patients can go home now, because we have all this list of items that we do and we check off, and patients really do great.
So thank you again. And again, we're on the phone today with Dr. Yabo Musa, who's a section chief of orthopedic anesthesia at Westchester Medical Center, and is spectacular at managing patients' anesthesia for orthopedic procedures. So again, sort of getting back, and I'm glad you brought up the issue of preoperative optimization in terms of trying to get people better prior to surgery. I think that so much of trying to do things with early discharges and getting people up early and doing all this really comes up to that the healthier people are coming into the surgery, the better they're going to be after the procedure. And certainly from my end, when I see them in the office and I tell them that they're going to be a candidate for a hip or a knee replacement, one of the things that we tend to speak of is, you know, are they allergic to any medications? Do they have medication issues with antibiotics? Do they have a penicillin allergy? And we tend to want to use a penicillin type of medication, which works a lot better for preventing infections. So most people can have those, even if they have had an allergy to penicillin in the past. We do recommend that if they have had a significant allergy to penicillin beforehand, to get the allergy tested beforehand. Cigarette smoking, again, is a big no-no. We try to have our patients stop cigarettes usually with at least 30 days in advance to make sure that they have optimized wound healing, because the cigarette smoking, as you had raised, it really does affect everything from the way that your tissues are oxygenated, wound healing, blood clots, and what have you. Increased BMI, increased weight. Every 10 pounds you take off, your body sees 40. So if you can take even some weight off, it'll make things a lot easier. We have people do some physical therapy beforehand. But one of the things that I'd like to touch base about is pain medication. Oftentimes we'll have patients coming in, particularly that have had previous back problems in the past, and they've been on opiates beforehand, and they've been on various pain medications. What do you recommend in terms of how to address people that have been on pain medication beforehand? Do you like them to stop it beforehand? Do you want them to continue on it through it, and you manage it at the time of the surgery? What's your recommendations on how to manage those patients?
So when patients are on, depending on the type of pain medication, but if you're on opioids, narcotics beforehand, it's good to just continue those narcotics depending on the dose. If you're on a high dose of narcotics before surgery, ideally you want to go to your chronic pain doctor or your pain management doctor so that we can reduce the dose to a level where the whatever we use in the hospital actually can be effective. We also use multimodal medications, which means we, in addition to your opioids, we add Tylenol, we add ibuprofen, Celebrex, Motrin. We also use muscle relaxants. So we use different kind of medications to help reduce the pain. So in terms of opioids, if you're on, like, let's say, for example, you're on 10 milligrams of oxycodone for the last, you know, 6 months, we would recommend you just continue that medication and not coming off, because then it kind of, we would have to start over. So while you're in the hospital, we'd just have to use a different kind of medication or increase your opioid dose in the hospital while you're in the hospital. So the next, probably for the most of the first week after surgery, we increase the dose, and then we start tapering you back down to what you were previously. There are also medications like gabapentin, Lyrica. We love patients to take those. Just continue those medications. Do not stop them, because they actually, as long as they're built up in your system, it actually helps in terms of post-op pain management and helping relaxing your muscles and also helping relaxing your nerves. So continue gabapentin and Lyrica if you're on that for surgery. So all the medications we like patients to continue is if you're on any muscle relaxants like Flexeril, if you're on Valium, we do want you to continue using that, because it also, again, during the hospital and also the first week after, those medications are very helpful in reducing inflammation, spasms of the muscles, and actually make you be able to tolerate physical therapy afterwards. So There is one medication that we, as anesthesia provider, we're cautious about, and that's buprenorphine, Suboxone. So if you're on Suboxone, the current guidelines is if you are on a dose higher than 16 milligrams, the goal is to have your primary, your pain management doctor reduce that dose to 16 or less. We don't want you to stop it, but that dose needs to be reduced. If it's not reduced, we as anesthesia providers are going to have a hard time controlling your pain afterwards because the medication is going to compete with the other opioids that we use to manage pain in the hospital. That's the only one medication that needs to be reduced below 16 milligrams, and then we can use other opioids. But that has to be done with a pain management physician. You can't just stop it yourself, so you need to actually see a pain management physician to do that, taper it down for you before surgery.
But that's very helpful.
Everything else, Tylenol, ibuprofen, gabapentin, Lyrica, low-dose opioids, just continue them, and then we can go from there.
That's really helpful. So, I mean, one of the nice parts, and I think that's been really terrific, is that if the program that we've sort of established for the joint replacement service is that we've got a very strong multimodal program with a real focus, particularly the people that have not been on opiates, really to avoid opiates perioperatively when as much as possible. And a lot of that, we tend to use a lot of things like anti-inflammatories, like Celebrex, Meloxicam, things like that. We use things like the gabapentin and Lyrica, which are nerve stabilizers that you mentioned beforehand, and then Tylenol. And many of our patients now, particularly because of the amazing anesthesia that we get perioperatively around the time of the surgery, many of them really after the surgery are pretty much just using anti-inflammatory-based pain medications. They use things like Tylenol, Advil. And we really tend to only use opiates like oxycodone, if at all, only for like maybe 3-4 days. And most patients, usually within the first week or so, are off of all opiates so that it really, you feel better. I mean, one of the biggest problems with opiates that we found is, number one, they're addictive. But number two is that they don't kind of make you feel good. You get nauseous, you get constipated, and oftentimes that's actually worse than the actual surgery. So I think that, you know, working with anesthesia, with orthopedic anesthesiologists like Dr. Moussa, we've had a lot of success in terms of trying to minimize opiates in general. So I think that, you know, look, we've been very successful, I think, working as a team, and I think that that's one of the best things that working at places at such as Westchester Medical Center, where we have a very strong joint replacement program right now, where we really work very closely with our anesthesia colleagues, is that we really can make the procedure much more comfortable for our patients, much safer for our patients. And the whole idea is to get people back home to being people and not patients as quickly as possible. Because the quicker we can get you out of the hospital of being back to the things that you enjoy doing, the better off you're going to be as a patient. So, so in a nutshell, any last thoughts that you want people to take home in terms of, like, they come in for, like, they're terrified about having procedure because of anesthesia? In the last 2-3 minutes, what would you tell them?
I would say, you know, it's okay to be nervous about anesthesia, but what we have now are great tools. So 90% of patients do great for joint replacement just because we're using the neuraxial anesthesia, regional anesthesia, nerve blocks. We're using multimodal. We're using less opioids, so you're not nauseous and you're not constipated. And don't be worried about being addicted to opioids. A lot of our patients, they come off the opioid in the first week, and you don't get addicted to it. And we have all the tools to help. Physical therapy helps a lot. NSAIDs help a lot. And also what I would say for you coming into for surgery, you also want to think about what you can do as a patient to make your recovery a lot better. So think about, you know, eating well in the month before your surgery, stop smoking, making sure that you know the list of your medications that you're taking so you can share with the anesthesia providers. Try to lose weight if you can. Like Dr. Zelikov says, like, you know, you lose 10 pounds and your body feels like you lost 40 pounds. So just leave the other part of the anesthesia to us, and you know you're in great hands with the anesthesiologist at Westchester Medical Center, and you're in great hands with Dr. Zelikov too. So our patients do really, really well. I would just focus on, like, doing what you can do as a patient, which is the good nutrition, stop smoking, trying to lose a little bit of weight, and you know, don't be too nervous about the anesthesia because we have great techniques and we have great devices that we can use to manage the anesthetic and also to manage your pain afterwards.
Thank you. That's with Dr. Yabo Muse, who is the section chief of orthopedic anesthesia at Westchester Medical Center in the anesthesia department. And we're very, very lucky to have her today speaking to us about the role of enhanced recovery pathways and specialized regional anesthesia techniques for hip and knee replacement surgery and for orthopedic surgery. So once again, Dr. Muse, thank you so much for joining us. And this is Dr. Stephen Zelikoff. And thank you again. And till next time, hope everybody has a great month. And thanks for listening to our session of Bone Talk.
Thank you.